Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Friday here on Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and well, you know what Friday means.
Start spreading the news.
Oh, that means Schomburg Stu is here. Hi, Stu.
And how are you? What's going on, John?
Well, you know, the normal stuff. But hey, if you'd like to call into the podcast, talk to Stu and I. 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so look for something hopefully popping up over there tomorrow morning. But while you're at sportstimeradio.com, hit that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. You could give that a like while you're over there. We greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, feel free to hunt me down on Twitter. I am at Burke Time, but sadly, we still don't have Stu there. Remember, we gave ourselves till the end of the year. So if you have anything for Stu, ship it off to me, and I will forward it along. So there you go. We're all set and ready to go.
All right. And you heard, of course, that Mr. Lucroy had two errors yesterday.
Oh, actually, no, I didn't hear that. But I got to tell you, you know, we're not only through – well, not even through week one of the NFL preseason, and I am already sick of Antonio Brown.
Didn't take long, huh?
No, not at all. You know, he cried his way out of Pittsburgh, and I understand a lot of players do that. Okay, no, you know, no big deal. You know, that especially in the NFL, that happens a lot. I mean, we got two running backs holding out. That just, you know, seems to be kind of the thing. So, all right, I can deal with that. I'm used to that. You know, then all of a sudden he's not practicing because he got this goofy cryothermic injury where he was dumb enough to not wear foot protection, you know, while he was in the chamber. So he has frostbite on his feet. But now there's a report that comes out today that says actually the feet aren't the big issue. He's upset because the NFL won't let him wear his own helmet, and he has now told the Raiders that if he's not allowed to wear it, he will retire.
What makes this helmet different than the normal NFL helmet?
The helmet he wants to wear no longer meets the new safety standards that, you know, the NFL had to put in because of concussions and, you know, the CTE effect and stuff that they've been dealing with. So, you know, this helmet no longer meets those requirements. So the players are no longer allowed to use it. I'm actually getting to the point where I feel like he just doesn't want to play football and he's looking for excuses to get out of it.
Yeah, you would think that he would want to use the helmet that was better protect. It would afford him better protection than the one he wants to use. It really doesn't make much sense when you think about it.
Yeah, well, oddly, it's the really humorous part about it is he complained that it affects his vision in a negative way, even though every other receiver has came out and said that it's actually helped theirs. So it just some kind of oddly huge contradiction with this guy. And, you know, I'm just fed up with it. It's kind of like, yeah, okay, great. Let's get on with our lives here. And
yeah. Retire and move
start
on.
Playing.
And is it when
yeah.
they say it affects his vision, is it peripheral vision or his normal front facing front type of vision?
Let me see if I'm sure there's a bazillion articles on it. Let me see if I can hunt one up here that'll tell me what he's crying about now. So we'll try this one and see what goes on. So come on. Oop, there we go. Let's see. They say that Brown had a two-hour conference call with an independent arbitrator on Friday on why he should be allowed to wear his helmet, which is 10 years old. So.
Yeah, that doesn't make much sense. Now, how old is Brown?
Oh, God, what is he now? I'm trying to figure out if he's even 30 yet. So, come on. 31.
Well, considering that team might have a year or two left, good years in the NFL, and it would be hard pressed for me to see why he would turn down that kind of money just because he's stubborn enough to want to wear a helmet that's not as safety conscious as the new ones. And of course, his vision is a problem, but that doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't say anything about how what vision it affects on him. So that this article doesn't go into it. So, I don't understand why you would want to wear a 10-year-old helmet. I mean, I get it. It's, maybe it's your lucky helmet or whatever, but this guy's a talented player and, he shouldn't have to worry about luck, but it just more slowly but surely it's excuse after excuse with this guy. And, I guess if I'm the NFL, I'll let him wear the helmet if he'll sign an agreement that when his career is over, he's not going to sue me for, any brain damage or CTE issues that he might have, due to wearing equipment that doesn't meet their safety standards.
I don't see the NFL doing that. I think, especially in today's society right now, when everything is so prone to being as health conscious as possible in these sports like hockey and football and whatnot, that I would be hard pressed to think the NFL would change their mind and allow them to wear that kind of a helmet, even if he did sign a waiver.
So yeah, I mean, it's the only thing I could think of that would, cover them. If I'm the Raiders, I'm also looking to broker this as well because, obviously I traded for this guy. They traded for him. They paid him a bunch of money. Let's face it. Now he's just being a child. If I can't have my helmet, I'm going home. So, it's at this point, what do you do with the guy? You wonder if there's an issue after this or, how it's going to go.
Yeah, well, no pun intended, but the guy sounds to me like a head case. Yeah, no joke intended, but he sounds like he has some issues, and I think that maybe it would be in the Raiders' best interest if he just up and retired. Now, if he doesn't play for the Raiders, say because of the helmet issue, is that it? Is he officially retired, or can he wait a year and, I'm okay now. I'm okay with wearing the helmet. I'll come back and play for somebody else.
Well, the problem is he's got a contract with the Raiders.
Right, exactly.
So, I don't remember how long he signed for, but, that would obviously be an issue, I'm sure they wouldn't be too happy on the fact that, hey, now this guy wants to come back and play for somebody else after we went through all this to accommodate him. So
now he's not doing this to renegotiate his contract, though, is he?
No, he already got his big deal. He, you know, when he signed there, he got big money, and I don't remember what it was. I was hoping to. It says here he got 5 years. Oh no, wait, that's this one. So do they have a contract here? Oh, no, they don't have the numbers here. I'll have to go to a different site to get the contract numbers, but he definitely got paid, so it, you know, not an issue there.
Well, there's another solution, by the way. There is another solution. Couldn't they keep the safety features of the helmet intact, but modify it so that it doesn't affect his vision adversely the way he claims it does?
You would think, but who knows? Yeah, let's see here. It looks like he has, counting this year, he's got 3 years left on a deal where he'll average a little over $16.7 million. The contract was 3 years at $50.125 million.
It's very difficult for me to believe that he's going to walk away from that deal.
So, yeah, over a helmet.
Because of a helmet issue. It doesn't make sense. And has he given them any kind of a deadline before this retirement takes place?
Well, no, you know, I think this was more of just a threat on his part. You have kids, you know what it's like. You won't let them do something, and it's like, well, if you don't let me do this, you know, I'm not going to do this, or I'm going to hold my breath. Okay, well, how long are you going to hold your breath actually for? You know, and that's really what this kind of seems like here. It's a kid throwing a tantrum because he didn't get his way.
Yeah, I'm taking my debt and going home, or my ball and going home.
Yeah, so, you know, right now he just seems to be holding his breath, hoping, you know, the league or the Raiders or somebody will actually side with him and, you know, hold his hand or, you know, whatever he's looking for this time. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if this is just a distraction to take away from the fact that his feet are in a lot worse shape than people thought they were. So,
Possible. Well, that being said, he probably would not get much, if any, playing time for the first two exhibition games anyway.
Right.
But when the third game comes along and the fourth game comes along, then it becomes a little more of a serious issue.
Yeah, and, you know, that's the thing we'll have to wait and see on, is by that time the third game rolls along, will he be playing? You know, that will be the interesting thing. You know, like, oddly, he's not having contact in practice. So I'm under the impression it's okay for him to wear the helmet there because they're not hitting. You know, he's not being hit or anything because of his feet. So,
well, it's not like Oakland will become an instant contender with or without this guy anyway.
Yeah, it's not like, I mean, I assume they're going to be improved from last year, but like I don't think they're a playoff team or anything like that.
No, they can be improved a few games, but I don't see them getting into the playoffs.
You know, yeah, I don't get it. Like I said, I'm just, it's like, really. You know, this is your big thing. So,
yeah, I think it's one of these stories that's going to go away pretty quickly, as far as I could think about. I think that'll be resolved, and his career will continue.
Yeah, I'm assuming down the road here they'll figure this out. So, you know, we'll see. But yeah, you know, who knows?
Yeah, well, the first two games are meaningless, as we pointed out. The first two games are really meaningless anyway, so
yeah.
We've got a ways to go before we start seriously watching these teams and seeing who's going to make the teams and who isn't going to make the teams.
Yeah, well, that's like I always get a chuckle out of, you know, the networks are like all over all the stuff that went on last night, and I'm like, guys, nobody really played. So, you know, I mean, like they made this gigantic deal. I guess the Giants' number one pick, the quarterback they took that everybody hated the pick on, went like, I don't know if he went 5 for 6 or 6 for 6 when he played. And it's just kind of like you guys realize he's playing against guys that are probably going to be driving for Uber when training camp is over.
Exactly. Exactly. It's always amusing when these things happen. And of course, I was impressed with Montgomery in the brief time he played for the Bears last night. But then I thought of myself, as you pointed out, well, who's he playing against right now? He looks good, but let's wait a little while before we anoint him the great running back we've been looking for.
Yeah, and that was the funny thing. Like, I heard some Chicago sports radio this morning on my short drive to work. I just clicked it on, and they were all over this guy because he had he had a nice run on the screen pass, and then he scored the touchdown, the rushing touchdown. And, yeah, and nobody seems to be pointing out the fact that he was literally on the field if the guys who were on the field against him make the team, they're only going to be there to play special teams, and the only way they would actually play defense would be due to injury.
Right.
So it was kind of, can we ease up on the praise here? I mean, it was just a little over the top, and I was like, you know, and I mean, these are reporters that have been in and around the game for, you know, a bazillion years. And it's like, did you guys just miss football that much that, you know, you kind of salivate over the smallest thing?
Yeah, I think that's it. I think people are so much looking forward to the new football season that anything, the first game's a big deal. Hey, football's back.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the slow-paced of baseball, and it's time to try something new. And this is not unusual, though. You always see a lot of stories coming out of the first couple of exhibition games. And how many guys are going to be on the practice team, if any? Are those guys even going to make the practice squad when it's all said and done?
Yeah.
I have my doubts. Right? Maybe one or two might make the practice squad, but let's temper our enthusiasm for another. Until the third game, and see what happens.
Yeah, you know, that's always, you know, kind of my thing. It's like, well, can we kind of wait and see who they're playing against? You know, take a look at the other side and tell me how many of those defenders you actually know before we, you know, get rolling about, well, hey, look at this guy or look at that guy or, you know. So.
Yeah, I've been disappointed too many times in the past on watching some of these exhibition games, which is why I don't watch them as closely now as I did years ago. And he doesn't even make the taxi squad or the practice squad when the season starts. So
yeah, I watched I watched the Bears' really dominant first series where they quickly went 3-and-out, and then I changed the channel. So
yeah, well, did you expect an actual first down?
Well, you know, I was kind of hoping for it. I believe there was only third and, like, was it one or third and two? It was a really short first down, and they handed off, and the guy basically just ran into the back of all the other guys in front of him. I was like, well, there's a nice culmination of what this season will probably end up looking like. So,
well, don't forget that a lot of things are held back until the third game and even the fourth game. And even then, you don't know for sure. And I always point out this, that the year the Bears won the Super Bowl and were one of the most dominant teams in the NFL history, They went 1-3 in the exhibition season. So I would discount almost everything that you see right now, especially the first two games.
Yeah, I was just kind of hoping he could trip and fall forward for a yard or two to get the first down, and I can see more than three plays. But, you know, I didn't get that. I was like, okay, I'll go watch something else. So.
Right, and maybe he'll play a quarter next game. Isn't that the way it usually works out, the second game at the starter will play a quarter?
You know, a lot depends on how smart your coach is, and since the Bears have the smartest coach in the NFL, you just don't know how it's going to go. I know, like, tomorrow night they were complaining already on the networks that Andy Reid wants Patrick Mahomes to play the entire first quarter. And, you know, nobody can believe that because it's just the first preseason game. You know, oh, my God, I can't believe he's got him out there for it. That's ridiculous. I guess they seem to forget that, A, you can no longer touch the quarterback, so there's very little chance of him actually getting hurt. And, B, if he just turned around and handed the ball off for the first quarter, it would go pretty quickly.
That's true. That is true. But that being said, of course, I do remember in previous years, and there have been some several serious injuries to some of the top players during the exhibition season, so you should be a little cautious at least.
Yeah, but that was when you could actually touch the quarterback. You know, now you can't even sneeze on him. So it's, you know, unless one of these guys is dumb enough to run themselves into trouble, you know, like I know the Eagles the backup quarterback, I should say, broke his wrist. A, he's the backup quarterback, and B, I believe he hit it on a helmet. So, you know, just kind of, you know, kind of the way that goes. But, you know, yeah, I was like,
now,
okay.
Does that mean that he's out for, what, 2 months? Is he out 2 months or more?
It's about 6 weeks, so. You know.
Well, I'm sure the Philadelphia fans weren't too happy about that happening.
Yeah, okay, now, I got to switch up on you here, and I'm really confused about this, but I'm reading here, and it says, Dodgers acquire Jose Lobaton from Mariners. But I'm looking at the calendar, and it's August 9th.
Yeah, how did that happen?
So, you know, but now that I'm reading it, it says, since Lobaton has been playing with the Seattle affiliate on a minors deal. So apparently he's just signed to a minor league contract, so that's why he's able to be traded. But that still seems kind of shady to me. I don't, you know, I mean, the trade deadline is the trade deadline, and I get it. It's not like Jose Lobaton is going to make a gigantic difference in the pennant race, and it does say it appears the Dodgers are just going to assign him to AAA because their top prospect got injured. But, yeah, it just, you know, I mean, we have a trade deadline, and now we're still somehow making trades.
So what you're saying is that it's theoretically possible for a team to maybe hide a guy at AAA, even though he probably is good enough and he's playing at the major league level, with hopes of hiding him there until after the deadline and then able to consummate a trade because of that rule stipulation.
Yeah, the way it looks like here, as long as he is signed to a minor league deal and he's, you know, he's not on a two-way contract or any of those things where, you know, if he gets called up, this happens or however it works out. So, yeah, that seems to be the way it goes. It looks like the Angels and the Rangers did the same thing. The Angels got a left-handed pitcher from the Rangers by the name of Miguel Del Pozo for cash. But in this case, it looks like the Angels are planning on bringing him up. But, again, he's not signed to a major league deal, you know, so that – that seems to be the key. I mean, obviously you're not going to have a lot of big name guys that aren't signed to major league deals, but you know, you can still, you know, there are ways to find kind of these little, you know, interesting guys. I mean, you know, Lobatone's a veteran catcher that can, you know, can really help a team. So
yeah,
it just
sure
seems shady to me. We have a trade deadline, and now we don't have a trade deadline.
Yeah, that does seem peculiar. Now, what about options? If a player has options remaining, does that affect the deal still can be made if he's in the minor league?
You know, the way it seems is it's just according to how your contract is written. You know, if you're, you know, because basically the way it would be, like, you know, Lobatone was on a minor league deal, so if he's brought up, I'm under the impression he has to be given a different contract. Oh, excuse me. So, yeah, it just seemed kind of weird.
Yeah, it does seem strange. Well, we know the rules are made to be broken, right? Rules are made to be broken.
Yeah, well, you know, you had to figure they would find a way to get around this. You know, I mean, that's, you know, if you're not trying. So, you
right.
know, you knew somewhere, someplace, somebody would figure this out. You know, and again, like I said, I mean, you know, they're not getting, you know, an all-star or anything. I mean, even at AAA, he played 75 games for the Mariners. He was hitting .236 with 13 homers. You know, even his major league.
Right, that's about it.
Yeah.
You'll get a journeyman. Let's face it, that's all you're going to get.
But, yeah, it just, you know, it was more weird to me by the fact that it said trade. I was like, wait, we can't make trades. So, you know, because, I mean, I would be more interested if that means the Yankees could deal a guy like Clint Frazier, you know, who's been up and down a little bit but is currently in AAA. You know, I mean, could a team actually go get a guy like that?
There are, now, if a team DFA'd a player, that means he can sign with anybody, even if the trade deadline is over with, right? That's another issue.
Right. Yeah, that's why, you know, the Cubs were able to get LaCroix for nothing. Joe Panik just signed with the Mets. He was the latest guy who was DFA'd. You know, the corresponding move was the Mets DFA'd Aiden Echeverria. So, you know, like Zach Godley ended up signing with the Blue Jays. You know, that seems to be the new thing here. Instead of the waiver deadline, you know, these were probably all guys that would have been moved had there been a waiver deadline. You know, but with there that being no more, teams are just cutting these guys loose.
And once a player is DFA'd, that means he could sign with any team he wants. There's no rule saying that.
If I remember correctly, it used to go that the team that DFA'd him had 10 days to either trade him or release him. Obviously, you can't trade him because we're past the deadline. So it's just an outright release. I believe the player would have an option to accept a minor league assignment if offered. So,
well, obviously, it would be in his best interest to hook up with another major league team if he gets a choice.
Right. You know, I mean, a lot of these guys, you know, Joe Panik's not going to take an assignment to AAA. You know, Jonathan Lucroy wasn't going to take an assignment to AAA, even if it was offered. So, you know, I mean, these kind of guys are major league level players. So, you know, that wasn't going to happen.
Do you think about this now for a second. We're talking about Lucroy. You think that the hamstring injury to Contreras will actually wind up helping the Cubs in the long run?
You know, it could. I mean, he's going to get the rest through what's generally the dog days of August.
Right.
You know, so he'll be able to come back, you know, in what you would think would be, you know, complete health for the stretch run. So, you know,
right,
it could be a plus. I mean, obviously, it just depends how the injury healed.
Yeah, right, exactly. And I thought I saw something about maybe the Cubs might be playing Lucroy more as a starter than Caratini. And I'm wondering if that's going to happen.
You know, it wouldn't surprise me with Joe Maddon. You know, I mean, he's obviously a manager who just got lucky and found a way to win a World Series. You know, he's really not the talented guy that everybody seems to think he is. The more you watch him, you realize the more clueless he is. What Theo needs to do is step in and say, hey, look, idiot, play this guy. Because in reality, what Caratini is a gigantic trade piece to save this team's ass down the line. So,
yeah, he,
you know, and you need to get him.
He's a valuable player.
You need to show him. Right. You know, I mean, you're looking at a guy who's a switch hitting major league catcher who on a lot of teams would be catching every day. But since the Cubs are lucky enough to have Wilson Contreras, he's just the backup. If he could go out and prove that he's an everyday catcher, there would be teams lining up to get him, and the Cubs could bring in some young AA, AAA level guys that they're going to need to pump life back into this organization when, you know, the Javi Baez's, Chris Bryant's, Anthony Rizzo, John Lester type guys hit free agency, because I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to re-sign all of them.
No, and that day is coming pretty soon, isn't it? I mean, it's not going to be too long before Brian and Baez and those guys become free agents. And then what's going to happen?
Right, because, I mean, you look at the landscape of it now. You know, you look at what Bryce Harper and Manny Machado got. Bryant is probably a notch below them, but that's still $25 million plus a year. Baez is as good, if not better, than those guys. That's $30 million plus a year. You know, Anthony Rizzo is probably a notch behind Bryant, but that still puts him at the $23, $24 million mark. No possible chance they're locking up all those guys long-term, besides the fact that they're still carrying Jason Hayward's contract, unless he magically opts out after this season, but I don't see that happening. So,
no.
You know, if one of these guys isn't traded, one or maybe two may walk away in free agency. My guess is actually Brian ends up in a Phillies uniform so he can play with Bryce Harper, but that's just my speculation. So, you know, I mean, Caratini is the perfect example of how to help save this team. But it wouldn't be surprised to me at all if Maddon is dumb enough to run Lucroy out there consistently, because God knows we couldn't play Addison Russell when he was hitting 240. But there's nothing wrong with running Jonathan Lucroy out there when he's hit 240 the last 2 years.
Yeah, and I always thought he was a solid defensive catcher, but he made two mistakes last night and he got caught twice for catcher interference. You don't see that happen too often. Twice in a game.
No, well, you know, he's average at throwing base runners out. He's about average. I think I looked it up, and he was 26% with the Angels, which is about average. So, you know, but he's always been, you know, called a good handler of the pitching staff, which I always find humorous, because now catchers get the signals from the dugout. It's not like anybody's calling their own games. So what does that really mean?
Can he frame the pitches? That's important, too.
Right.
Not every pitch,
you know,
catcher can do that.
Is he a good pitch framer, which David Ross actually claimed there is no such thing? It's your relationship with the umpire that gets you the calls or not. So.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting. I have to ask you, as a former college catcher, how are you with framing?
Oh, I was horrible. I just caught the ball. So
you do it
on the outside. You catch the ball, you bring it back into the strike zone, and you hope you get the call. You know, I mean, obviously the scenario is that you don't have to move the glove and he hits his target, but, you know, as we know, a lot of pitchers can't do that. So.
Yeah, there have been a few major league catchers that have been maybe known for being good at framing the pitch. I think Javi is good. The Cardinal catcher who's, I think, still hurt, right?
Yeah, I believe he is. But, you know, again, that, you know, he gets more of those calls on his reputation than he does actually framing the pitch.
Yeah, that's another thing, too.
He's a Hall of Famer. So, you know, I mean, it's just one of those things. And, you know, that's exactly how David Ross explained it. It's just kind of like, why did Greg Maddux get all those calls? Because the catcher could set the glove there and he could hit it. Well, the glove didn't move. It looked like a strike, even though it was technically in the other batter's box. So,
And I guess a good reputation can, once you get that reputation around the league, it's going to serve you well, no matter what position.
As a
pitcher especially.
The reputation more than anything they can say about pitch framing or whatever other BS sabermetric stat they want to try to make up that, you know, doesn't mean anything. It's just some geek at a keyboard trying to find his way into the game because, you know, he never had any talent to even play Little League. So, you know, it's just like, oh, well, let's come up with this or that. I mean, a lot of these things are meaningless and, you know, really shouldn't even exist. And, you know, sadly, pitch framing is one of them.
Yeah, it's interesting, especially now, of course, with the way the cameras and all the broadcasts now, you'll have that little frame picture to the right of the screen and they'll show the pitcher if the umpire called it correctly or if the pitcher got a break because of the framing of the catcher. It's very difficult to hide nowadays.
So yeah, and you know that's the whole thing behind it. It's just kind of like, you know, guys don't really even frame the ball. They just catch it. You know, it's just kind of like, here's my glove, hit my glove. If the guy hits the glove, there's a really good chance he's going to get the call. You know, as long as that glove doesn't move, and, you know, that's the umps look for those kind of things, the pitcher's hitting his target, you know, you get those calls even when they're not strikes, and they shouldn't be called strikes.
Yeah, I think that what both teams look for in behind a plate is an umpire is consistent. If he decides to call the high strike from the get-go, he should do the same thing for the entire game. But you don't always see that happening.
No, you know, and that's the tough part with a lot of these guys is, you know, one, and that's the worst part. As a player at any level, the worst part is when you get an ump who one time this is a strike and the next time it's a ball, because what's it going to be the third time?
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah, you
know,
get frustration
and
the pitchers, some calls are going against you, and I think it frustrates the pitcher, and then you have to kind of lay the ball over the plate the next time and with unpleasant results. And we've seen that happen many times.
You knew coming through high school and stuff. I mean, there were umps that, you know, the term we always used is literally you had to throw the ball through the clown's mouth, like the old carnival game, to get a strike. So you knew if you were a hitter, you were going to have plenty of stuff to swing at, because the only way they were getting strike calls is basically if the pitch was right down the middle.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I mean, the best thing, you know, maybe, you know, this is something LaCroix could be good at is being able to settle your guys down, because it's incredibly frustrating for a pitcher when, you know, you got a guy who's rolling and he's hitting his marks and everything looks good and, you know, you just can't get the call. So.
Yeah. I think one of those pitchers that get upset that John Lester, of course, is one that comes to mind that, He shows his emotions pretty well, and unfortunately, it could backfire on him sometimes. Of course, he didn't do too well the last start, no matter what, if he just missed the corners or not.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and that's, again, that's just one of those, you know, one of those things that they kind of have to learn to live with and, you know, move on and hope, you know, that,
right,
you know, they get the next one. You know, that's all you can really do.
Yeah.
And a lot of veteran guys can do that. It's the younger guys. You know, the veteran guys you always see are the guys who wait till they're coming out of the game and then they freak out. And they just let the ump have it. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, let's face it. It's human umps, and they're going to have bad games. So.
Yeah, some umps have the reputation of being very bad behind the plate. I think, doesn't Angel Hernandez have that poor reputation of being
okay.
one of the best, worst ball strike callers in baseball?
Yeah, he definitely fits into yeah, you know, to that echelon of umpires. So, you know, just kind of the way it goes. But, you know, not a big deal.
Right. I do have to ask you one thing. I'm sure you didn't see it, but did you know that Javi Baez batted left-handed last night in the ninth inning?
I actually just saw it here. There is a video of it on MLB.com, but I haven't watched it yet. It just says Javi Baez made a cameo appearance as a switch hitter because he's
yeah,
a man of
right.
the world. So
yeah, there was of course there was a position player for Cincinnati in the ninth inning, and he threw about 40 miles an hour.
Oh.
So. He swung at he took a mighty swing left-handed at the first pitch and flied out to center field. Not deep.
Yeah, and you know while you are talking about that game, I am going to personally take this moment to rip Dallas Keuchel for screwing me over last night. What I decided to do on FanDuel, I got a free reward because I had been playing so much. So I decided to do what they call stacking a lineup. You're allowed to take four guys from a team. I had four Cubs and four Reds in my lineup because I had a feeling it was going to be a very big offensive night. In return, I thought, well, I need a nice, solid pitching performance. Well, Dallas Keuchel against the Miami Marlins, who I believe are the worst team in the National League. He
yes.
sucked. He was an embarrassment. Baseball last night. I mean, I can understand why nobody wanted to sign him after watching that performance. My hitting lineup was awesome. You know, I had Castellanos. I had the guy from the Reds who hit the bomb, Aquino or Aquinos. You know, I think all my guys did except I had Jose Peraza who did nothing. All I needed was if I would have got an average pitching performance, I would have had a fantastic night. I think I needed 5 points out of Keuchel to win my money back. He got -1. He sucks so bad.
Man, yeah, he has been a major disappointment this year.
Yeah,
this year.
You know, right now I wouldn't take Dallas Keuchel against one of the teams in the Little League World Series after last night's performance. So.
Not even against South Bend, for example, right? He'd probably get hammered there too.
Yeah, I don't care. I don't care who he's pitching against. You know, the term used to, it's probably politically incorrect now, but they always used to term the Rachel School for the Blind. I wouldn't use him against that team right now. So.
Yeah. Well, I think you ought to cross him off your list and future selections that you make.
Yeah, he actually, as they say, he made the list of guys I won't use. There are guys that I just don't touch because I have bad luck with them. And he is now on the list of guys that I will never use again as a pitcher. I don't care who he's going against. You know, and it's not even the fact that he had to beat the Marlins. I just needed him to be average, and he couldn't even be that.
Couldn't do that.
So.
Of course, the next time you don't select him, I'll wind up pitching a three-hitter. For 8 innings or seven
yeah,
innings.
You know, that's kind of how it always goes when, you know, I don't use guys, you know, or stuff like that. But, you know, even so, it's just to the point where I don't care. He could throw back-to-back no-hitters, and I won't use him. It just doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, what you stung so badly like that on the night when you had a chance to really score a lot of points, it's got to be frustrating.
So, yeah, well, you know, because it was weird because I knew I was having a good night. I had seen the, and again, I'm probably butchering his last name, the Aquinos homer on the MLB Network. And then when I got up, I knew Castellanos had hit two bombs. So I knew I was getting big points out of those guys. I believe I had Jason Hayward in my lineup. You know, some of the other guys, like Joey Votto, just had an average night, but he was contributing. So, you know, I knew I had Chris Bryan in my lineup who had, I believe he had a 25 or 26 point night for me. So my hitters were on. I was definitely going to money as long as I just got an average pitching performance. And instead I got an embarrassment against a terrible team.
I think, by the way, Hayward may have gone 0 for 5 last night. So I don't,
didn't
he wouldn't have done too well
points
with him.
Maybe he was one of my, maybe he was my disappointing Cub that I had, but I thought he had scored some points. I hope he wasn't 0 for 5. I have him in my lineup tonight because he's leading off. I like that. I like the idea of him getting that leadoff spot in Cincinnati. So
he's been tapering off a little bit lately. I hope he can bounce back tonight for you.
Yeah, he better. So, you know.
Or else.
I want to double check his total here and, you know, and see what he was last night, but because I didn't think he took a zero. I remember Peraza taking a zero, but oh no, I was wrong. Peraza actually scored points. No, Hayward was he scored me 12-2 last night. They have him for a hit by pitch, a run, and a stolen base. So maybe
no,
he was 0 for 5 and he got.
Yeah. but you still got points though. So that makes up
right.
A little bit.
So, yeah, you know. But, yeah, like I said, the lineup was fine. I had 144 points with the lineup. You know, on average, you know, Dallas Keuchel scores about, I think it was, you know, 25, 26. That puts me way up in the money if he just has an average night. So.
you would got about $20 at least, right? Maybe.
Probably. You know, I had a really good chance to really cash in, and he chumped it out for me. He was just embarrassing. So, we'll see if I can bounce back tonight. Here's what I ended up with today. I normally don't give these out, but I have Walker Buehler for the Dodgers as my pitcher. I swapped Buster Posey in at the catcher first base spot. I was originally going to go with Brandon Belt, but he's not in the starting lineup. I had to save some money because I spent a lot of money on pitching, and you'll see a couple other positions. I have Brochier from Tampa Bay at second. I believe his first name is Mark. Jose Ozuna from the Pirates at third. Charlie Culberson of the Braves at short. My outfield is Jason Hayward, Brett Gardner, and Mike Trout. And then my utility guy is Manuel Margot. So that's what I'm running with tonight. And hopefully I can get a bounce back start out of Buehler and Trout hits a couple bombs and I win some money.
Well, one can only hope. And in your league, I noticed that you can cross leagues, right? You can have American and National League selections both. Are there any leagues that are exclusive for the National League? Or exclusive American League?
You know, there are some, but I don't know if they're on FanDuel. I think there might be, but, you know, like I don't go searching for them because you know my rule. I don't ever spend more than like a buck or two.
Right.
So I just kind of look at something I'm comfortable with and I throw my lineup in. But I do believe there are some leagues that is, you know, NL or AL only.
Yeah, that makes it. I suppose that would make it a little more difficult because you got to be a little bit more selective in your approach when it's exclusively National or American League. Then you have to take the DH into consideration if it's exclusively American League as well.
So yeah, you know, it does make it. You know, I don't know if I want to say tougher, but it makes it a lot different, you know, to juggle your lineup. I mean, even, you know, like they have the option where you can just do the late games where there's only like three games or sometimes even two games where you can choose guys from. And it can be difficult to get your lineup together in a good way when it's, you know, it's so minimal like that. You know, a lot of the tough part is, you know, when you pick a pitcher, you really don't want to take hitters from the team he's going against, because obviously you want your pitcher to do well. But when you run into those shorter options, sometimes you have to.
Yeah, you do.
You know, and it's, you know, it's one of those things where you hope the guy that you put in your lineup hits like a solo home run or two solo home runs, and those are the only two runs your pitcher gives up, and he gets the win with a boatload of strikeouts. So.
Yeah. And did the rules change at all during the playoffs?
No, they don't make any adjustments. They do eventually stop. I don't remember if it was the championship series or the World Series last year, because it just becomes too difficult to put a put a lineup together.
Yeah. Just especially during the World Series. I mean, if at least in the AL and the AL championship and the NL championship, you get four teams to choose from, and you have some options. But when it comes to the World Series, maybe it's time to pull the plug and stop it.
So, yeah, you know what I mean? You know, I'm sure I'm not the only one who had Dallas Keuchel issues, but, yeah, that was quite frustrating. So.
It had to be. But I hope you learned a valuable lesson. Don't choose him anymore.
Yeah, don't choose him anymore. But, you know, normally it's kind of humorous because stacking never works for me. I've heard guys who are just proponents about it, and they love it. And, you know, a lot of times what they do is they find the game that – Las Vegas has rated as the highest scoring game, because obviously those guys in Vegas know what they're talking about, you know, otherwise they would go out of business. So, you know, and they'll stack their lineup according to how Las Vegas has it. I've never been a huge proponent of it, mostly because I've just had crappy luck with it. And, you know, when I get these free rolls, they call them free rolls, I always like to try something different. And I thought, well, you know, the Cubs have been playing good. They're playing in Cincinnati. I knew Cole Hamels was just making his second start back, so I thought he might either have a short outing or have some struggles. And, you know, I mean, Cincinnati is, you know, I mean, they're an okay team. I mean, they're not going to blow anybody out of the water, and they don't have any real dominant pitcher. So I thought, well, let's try this. And it worked, and I couldn't get the pitching performance I needed.
Yeah. When you make the selections, you ever take these – do you ever take the stadium into consideration? For example, Cincinnati has a reputation of being a good hitting ballpark.
Yeah.
And do you factor that in when you make a choice? Because some parks are awfully tough to hit in. Oakland, for example, it's always been known as a pitcher's park.
Yeah, that's one of the first things. And, like, even FanDuel considers it when they price players. When Colorado has a home game, everybody's price is higher than it normally is. They jack it up on everybody. You know, even the bench guys who only play part-time, you know, if they happen to get a start in Colorado, their price tag is $1,000 or $1,500 higher than it normally is. So it's all taken in, and, you know, you look at those things. I mean, obviously Colorado, Cincinnati – Arizona is a good place to hit. You know, you know, even Wrigley, if you know the wind is blowing out at Wrigley, you know, you hope you can find a guy you like in that game to get in the lineup.
So before a game at Wrigley, for example, do they tell you in advance if the wind's blowing in or out?
No, you have to go find that stuff yourself. And, you know, sadly, like, there's a lot of time I don't have time to do that kind of research. But that's what these guys who do this for a living can do, you know, because they're on the computer all day. So wherever you are, you can go get the weather report from Chicago. You know, which way is the wind blowing? You know, I mean, I'm sure you could probably get the weather directly from Wrigley Field. So
yeah, that's critical in your choices too. If the,
right.
It's an entirely different ballpark when the wind blows in as when it blows out.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, obviously the other thing I would like to know is, say I have a, even if he's just an, what you would call an average starting pitcher, and that wind is going to blow in all game, I may want to use that guy and save some money because he's probably not going to give up any home runs. You just got to hope he just doesn't give up a bunch of things and ends up giving up a bunch of runs. So, there are ways to save money like that when, you're kind of looking around and, you figure out the weather conditions. Obviously the other end, I mean, if, say the Astros show up at Wrigley, the wind's blowing in and it's Justin Verlander pitching, I'm going to spend that money. You know, they're probably going to charge 10 or 11 grand for him. I'm going to spend that money to get Verlander because you're probably going to get double-digit strikeouts. He'll probably go 7 or 8 innings. And, there's a good chance with the wind blowing in, he's not going to get any runs. So.
Well, there have been occasions when the wind has shifted during a game too.
Yeah, and that's one of those things. Obviously, you can't predict. It's just one of those things. You got to hope that. If it does shift, you got to hope you're out by the time that happens. So.
Yeah, well, I don't think they had FanDuel then, but if you knew the wind was blowing, howling out. During that 23-22 Philadelphia game against the Cubs a number of years ago, you would have cleaned up on those hitters for sure.
Well, that was the thing where, no matter what the weather was at Wrigley, if Mike Schmidt was in town, you put Mike Schmidt in your lineup because there's probably a pretty good chance he was going to hit a home run. So.
Yeah, he always did. He loved playing at Wrigley. He was a heck of a hitter in his own right anyway, though.
Yeah. Well, and that's like one of the things now. I mean, anytime the Yankees play Baltimore, you got to have at least one Yankee in your lineup and just hope he's the right guy to hit the home run because I believe they've hit 52 against them this season. So, that's always a risk you're willing to take.
Sure.
But, it's just the object of being able to – take the time and figure it all out.
Imagine how they would be doing if they were healthy all season.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the scary thing is, they're piecing it together with these, a lot of these guys were cast offs. I mean, Gio Urshela was cast off by the Indians and the Blue Jays. And it's just kind of, he seems to have found a home and,
Well, I, along with many, predicted them to win the division, but I didn't think it would be this kind of a runaway.
No, I didn't either. But let's see if we can work this in here. We know we didn't get anything in last week. We ran out of time, but we know the Cubs have a game in hand here with the Reds. So I got to ask you, do you have them winning the series, and do you think they sweep this?
No sweep, but I'm going to go on a limb and say 3 out of 4 against Cincinnati this time. They're due to win a World Series, right? They're due. They've got to win a World Series eventually.
We are kind of up against the clock tonight, so I'm just going to ask you, as a team, how many combined strikeouts do the Cubs have tonight?
I will go for 8 tonight.
All right, there you go. Right at the buzzer. All right, Remember, this podcast just came over to TuneIn.com.
Formula.